This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Hey, what's news, listeners? It's Sunday, May 5th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli.
And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News Sunday, the show where we tackle the big questions about the biggest stories in the news by reaching out to our colleagues across the newsroom to help explain what's happening in our world.
This week, we're answering your questions about pay equity in sports after the rise of basketball phenom Caitlin Clark and record viewership of the NCAA Women's Final. Could Caitlin Clark's rising star mean a new dawn for women's basketball? Clark is the Iowa superstar who helped drive the NCAA women's tournament final to an all-time record of 18.9 million viewers last month. As a reminder, that was nearly four times what the women's final drew just 2 years ago. It also surpassed the NCAA men's final for the first time in history. Clark went number one in the WNBA draft and was picked up by the Indiana Fever. And after all that, her starting salary this season will be $76,535. That reveal sparked a good deal of discussion from fans, and it's renewing conversations about pay equity in professional sports. Even President Biden weighed in. In a tweet, he said it's time women are paid what they deserve. We asked you, our listeners, what questions you have about the economic differences between men's and women's professional sports. And you delivered. Many of you thought the answer to why men make more than women in professional basketball is pretty straightforward, because the NBA makes more money. But is it really so simple? We'll get to that and more with our senior sports writer, Rachel Bachman. Welcome, Rachel.
So great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's start with the basics, with the economics of pro basketball. How does the NBA make money, and how does that translate to athlete salaries?
Well, several ways. The sale of broadcast rights, corporate sponsorships, ticket sales, licensing, merchandising, those are really the main forms. And of course, the more money the NBA makes, the more money it's able to pay players.
Now let's compare that to the WNBA. Same structure?
It is a roughly similar structure, but each league has its own collective bargaining agreement with players. So while the NBA promises about half of its revenue to players, the WNBA has a different, more complicated formula. But the bottom line is that WNBA players get far less total league revenue than NBA players get from their league.
I want to ask you more about those deals later, but many of our listeners pointed out that the WNBA simply doesn't make as much money as the NBA. Here's Sophia Scaglione of Brooklyn, New York.
How much of the pay gap between male and female pro athletes can be attributed to like different market sizes or different profitability of the male versus female leagues? Is the difference being driven primarily by how much money both sides have? Are there other more systemic or historic reasons for the discrepancies we see?
And Rachel, this is a question we heard in many different forms from a bunch of our listeners.
Obviously, these leagues have very different histories. The NBA was founded about 78 years ago and into a very different landscape. You know, there were many fewer television channels. There was arguably less to do with your free time, no social media and so on. The WNBA came along in the late 90s at a time when there was far more competition, not only with other sports, but just with other things to do with your time and money. The WNBA really had to fit into the existing entertainment world and essentially make its own way. It was an outgrowth of the NBA. The NBA founded the WNBA, but it really is moving toward trying to make itself a self-sustaining league.
And players don't just make money from that base pay. There's endorsements, of course. Rachel, you reported that, according to sources, Caitlin Clark is set to sign an 8-year deal worth up to $28 million with Nike, the biggest name in sportswear. So how much could she actually stand to make this year?
Very likely several million. We don't know for sure because she has other endorsement deals. She can also make up to a few a few hundred thousand dollars from the WNBA itself. It has some marketing agreements. Some of the league stars can make more money from the league on top of their salary. So her base salary is a little bit misleading in terms of her compensation. And when you factor in her sponsorships, it's very misleading.
Yeah, people certainly had strong reactions to that reveal.
Yes, of course.
How does that compare, though, to what men can make?
The one-to-one comparison is the number one pick in the NBA draft last year was Victor Wembanyama of San Antonio Spurs. His base salary was about $12 million this year. So, you know, 150-something times what Caitlin Clark's base salary is.
Okay, but like we talked about with Clark, they also have endorsement possibilities. What are the differences there between men and women?
The NBA players, of course, can make many millions of dollars a year. And between the two of those things, you know, the NBA markets itself, right? It uses its own revenues to market the league. It doesn't need to pay the players separate amounts to do that. Whereas the WNBA added those marketing agreements to its collective bargaining agreement to augment the salaries in the WNBA.
Okay, so they're structured differently. The leagues are different sizes, right? The NBA is made up of 30 teams. The WNBA is less than half that with 12. And you mentioned earlier that, of course, the NBA has been around a lot longer than the WNBA. The NBA started in 1946, while the WNBA is only 28 years old. And a number of listeners again called in and pointed this out. So, Rachel, do we just need more time? How has the WNBA changed and grown in the past three decades or so?
Well, it's interesting because the early days of both leagues were pretty similar. One of the things that NBA went through was a bunch of teams folded early on because it's a very speculative venture to start a new sports league. Not every market succeeds, not every team succeeds. And the same thing happened with the WNBA. It particularly struggled during the economic recession of the late 2000s. Both leagues really had to weather those things. One of the differences is historically, people have been more willing to lose money in the short term for men's leagues than women's leagues. And that is one of the things that is just beginning to change. Women's sports just generally are starting from way behind, timing-wise, and they're having to really find their own way in, as I said, a very established sports landscape. We're in a very mature sports landscape with some of the richest leagues in the world. And women's sports came along much later and are having to compete one way or another with all of them.
Okay, so we have the lay of the land, and coming up, we'll talk about whether we should reframe the conversation about pay equity and how the WNBA's future could be different. That's after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Rachel, we've talked about how we got here and where we stand, and it may not really be a one-to-one comparison when it comes to the NBA versus the WNBA and how men and women are paid. Some of our listeners suggested we should try looking at this in a different way. Here's a thought from Garrett Shimola from Chicago, Illinois.
How much are the NBA players paid as a percentage of the revenue versus the WNBA?
And Garrett wasn't alone. Listener Kevin Palmer from McLean, Virginia, made the same point.
Regarding WNBA pay versus NBA pay, how does that pay compare to total revenues of each franchise?
Rachel, what do you think about that? Does that make more sense as a comparison?
That's actually a great question to ask. NBA players are guaranteed 51% of basketball revenue as part of their labor deal with the league. That means that of the league's total revenue, about half of it goes to the players. Under the current WNBA deal, it's much more complicated. Players are paid a percentage of revenue, but only if the league meets certain revenue targets per year and cumulatively. And so the bottom line is WNBA players end up getting paid a much smaller percentage of the WNBA's total revenues than NBA players get paid as a percentage of that league's revenues. Now, the WNBA doesn't release those revenue figures, so we don't know exactly the share that WNBA players are getting paid, but a number of them have objected to getting what they believe to be far less than half of the revenue that the league generates.
Picking up on that point, if we're looking at pay equity in sports generally, how useful is it to even compare WNBA to NBA salaries? Jason Van Bemmel of Bel Air, Maryland, called in and asked, what about other sports?
A better comparison is actually to compare the WNBA to Major League Soccer. They're more similar in size in terms of the revenue they generate. And if you look at the starting salaries for the top draft picks in the MLS Super Draft, they're actually very comparable.
That's actually a great comparison because they are similar ages. Major League Soccer is a little bit larger league. It has more teams. But when I wrote about this comparison a few years ago, the TV audiences for the games in each league were nearly identical on the same network, ESPN. So it really is kind of apples to apples. The big difference is, number one, Major League Soccer was losing more money than the WNBA, way more. In 2018, the NBA commissioner said the WNBA was losing more than $10 million a year. 2 years later, a source told me that Major League Soccer was losing more than $100 million a year. And this is not atypical for fledgling sports leagues, as these both are, believe it or not. They're still considered relatively new leagues. But Major League Soccer generally has wealthier owners, and they were likelier to own the stadiums in which their teams played. And that does two things. One, they're revenue generators, right? They can sell naming rights. They can sell sponsorships. They can control much more. And two, they become an asset that's part of the value of the entire franchise. And right now, there is very little equivalent on the women's side.
Hmm. So, Rachel, what could change the economics of the WNBA? We talked about this also last month when those viewership numbers hit, and I remember you being really surprised by those numbers. With the benefit of a little more time to consider this, is that viewership record something that could make a big difference here?
It actually could, and the reason is because what Caitlin Clark did with women's college basketball, few athletes in the history of sports have done in any sports context. So she comes into the league with great promise. And she comes in at really kind of a perfect time because two things are about to happen. One, the WNBA is in the process of negotiating its next big TV deals, and higher ratings can mean more money for those. So if she does help move the needle on ratings, they can get more money for their broadcast rights. And also, players in the WNBA have been saying they want to reopen their labor deal with the league. Rising ratings and full arenas and more interest and buzz and more sweatshirts selling are all much stronger arguments for a higher pay. The effect that she already had on the draft, which was not a very intensely viewed thing in the past, she quintupled the highest previous rating for the draft. And that was when people knew exactly what was going to happen. She was going to be taken number one overall. So there was no suspense.
And they still wanted to tune in.
Exactly. Women's college basketball was already growing when Caitlin Clark came along. The WNBA is also growing. Ratings were up last year, for instance. And so her arriving at a time when that ground is fertile, I think is really great timing for the league overall.
I've been speaking with the Wall Street Journal's senior sports writer, Rachel Bachman. Thank you so much, Rachel.
So great to be here. Thank you.
And that's it for What's New Sunday for May 5th. Today's show was produced by Charlotte Gartenberg with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. We got help from deputy editors Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli. We'll be back on Monday morning with a new show. Thanks for listening.